Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Kroll. And before I introduce everyone on the Royal Blue Podcast today, I want to say if you get through today's show, you'll be highly commended. joining me today, we've got the Echo's Everton FC reporter, Chris Beasley. Chris, how are things? Trip back from London?
Yeah, I've had better ones. Yeah, Joe and I actually took the healthy option. It was still a bit windy in the capital, but we walked from Euston to Stamford Bridge, about 5 miles. Took us a couple of hours, but that's the highlight of the day. Yeah, once the football started, things went downhill rapidly.
Okay, then. Well, we've got also Echo Sports reporter Conor O'Neill, a bit of a rare appearance. Conor, you seem a little bit desperate to get on this podcast today. I wonder what the agenda is going to be.
Well, you know, we've got to help the supporters, a bit of therapy avenue every now and then. So I thought I'd step up to the mark and, you know, and smooth sailing through this therapy session, which I think it's probably going to be.
Well, yeah, good to have you on and talk the blues. Just a reminder, we are live on YouTube, so please give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a follow, click the bell, show us your support, will be greatly appreciated. Please submit your questions, submit your comments, and I will put them to the lads who will hopefully provide some decent answers. The agenda then, well, there's obviously only one place where we can start, and that was the 6-0 defeat to Chelsea last night at Stamford Bridge. Chris, we'll start with you.
Yeah.
Just a bit of a line from an Echo piece.
Yeah.
Sean Dyche described the Everton capitulation against Chelsea as a horrid night.
Yeah.
What would you describe it?
Yeah, I think that's perfect, isn't it? You can use any sort of adjective you want to pick from that. You know, embarrassing has been used, shambolic. Yeah, it was an open game from the start. And you maybe thought, oh, well, that would favour Chelsea. But, you know, both teams like each other in the first few minutes. And to be fair, Beto had a big chance early on. Then it's typical, goes down the other end 1-0. And then you fear that's it. Although, you know, from that moment on, you thought, well, Everton are going for a long night and going to struggle to get back in this. I don't think anyone was sort of expecting that kind of hiding. So, you know, whatever you think of Sean Dyche, his teams don't tend to get beaten as emphatically as that, and yeah, the wheels just came off, didn't they? Cole Palmer, to be fair to him, absolutely irresistible form. He was sensational on the night. Obviously, he'd already got that hat trick by the time he put the penalty away after a bit of a wrestling match with his teammates to get the ball. But yeah, that was the problem, wasn't it? I think it's been said by others that the only person who was going to stop Cole Palmer was his own Chelsea teammates. Everton attempted to get near him, often they couldn't. They tried to hack him down, they couldn't get near him, and it's the same with some of the other Chelsea players. Got a few bookings later on, but it's too little too late. It was just way off the mark. So many of them. Spoke to James Tarkowski afterwards, you know. I mean, Connor speaks to him a lot. Fair play to James, whatever you think of him as a player. You know, he fronts up, he comes out, you know, as a man speaks to you. And, you know, they should all do that, basically, but, you know, they don't. And he does. And, you know, he said, you know, let everyone down there. And they will come on to it. But he feels they let the manager down. He feels they let the supporters down. And he says it wasn't just down to tactics. They just weren't at it. Too many players weren't at the levels last night.
I mean, Connor said this a couple of times over the past couple of weeks. Everton always find new and gut-wrenching ways to lose football matches, and you know that trend continued last night. 6-0, heaviest defeat of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't gut-wrenching last night though, was it? That was embarrassing. Like, gut-wrenching is, you know, finds the way to throw away a 1-0 lead or a 2-1 lead in the dying seconds, being outclassed from probably minute 5 to minute, you know, to the early end is embarrassing. And it was embarrassing for large part of last night. You know, the defending was abysmal, the mistakes were terrible. And, you know, even if you go back to as far as Beto's miss, you know, that was horrific, because another the offside flag goes up, but I think on replay suggests that probably wasn't offside, and VAR perhaps would have overruled that one. It was just a bad night, but it was a continuous trend of bad outings for the Blues since the Fulham game in the Carabao Cup back in December. I think, you know, you can probably count on one hand how many real decent performances we've seen from Everton at that time. Obviously, you know, it's only one Premier League win in that time, and that come against Burnley the week before Chelsea, and that wasn't exactly a great performance, was it? That was a very tough watch, if we're being brutally honest. So yeah, it was a quite sobering night, I think, for all concerns, and, you know, it's a real worry because Everton really seems to have fallen off a cliff at the worst possible time, because, you know, I know we all sit around and, you know, you look at the games we've got to come and where we are in terms of points, and, you know, we all believe Everton should have enough to stay in the Premier League. If they play like that and make the mistakes like they did last night, like they did last night, there's a good chance to play in the Championship next season.
I mean, just to stay with you there, just because I want to touch on your point, you say they've fallen off a cliff at the worst possible time, but this has been going on since December, hasn't it? Late December.
Yeah, but I think that my big worry is that, like, the performances are getting worse, okay, and the mistakes, people not doing the basics, you know, track on runners. Just, you know, showing a bit of pride, a bit of effort. You know, so many times last night Chelsea just breezed past. You know, I think it was the Palmer's second goal ahead of where, you know, no one seems to track the runners, no one seems to keep up with play. It's just, it's the bare basics. And when you start doing when the bare basics go, alarm bells start ringing. And you know, like I say, you know, we did beat Burnley last time before Chelsea, but that wasn't exactly an inspired performance, was it? And let's face it, that was only because the Burnley goalkeeper kicked the ball against Dominic Calvert-Lewin that we come away with a 1-0 win. So, yeah. I'm extremely worried because the whole vibe and the whole mood just doesn't seem right, and, you know, we've got some real relegation cup finals coming up in the next few weeks, starting on Sunday at home to Nottingham Forest. Everton need to find form, and they need to find form fast, because if not, you know, we will be very nervous looking over our shoulders to come back.
I mean, Chris, we'll come on to all of this, but I just wanted to touch on your point about what Tarkowski said, and obviously kind of left to the defence of the manager a little bit, blaming the players. Am I reading too much into it, you know, or reading between the lines? Is it a suggestion here that the players have kind of down tools on Dice, or is it just kind of a rallying cry from an influential player in the team?
Yeah, I'd be worried about using the phrase rallying cry. It's a bit unfair. People obviously say Seamus Coleman hasn't done a lot of these sort of interviews over the years, and people go, it's another rallying cry. We don't like that. So it's a bit of an unfair sort of term, that one, isn't it? Because, like I said, Tarkowski's the one who comes out. I ask him the questions. He gives me the answers, and I thought he was brutally honest with it. In terms of, like I say, with the manager, I've still got a piece who's got coming up later all about this, because there has been a suggestion. There's a big suggestion online. I know Sean Dyche doesn't bother with all that with social media, but, you know, he accepts the views of the fans, and he says, you know, I'll always accept that criticism. A lot of people have made that observation, have said that they, you know, that is the fear, you know, has he, you know, the infamous phrase in my piece is about this, lost the dressing room, and Connor mentions there how things have deteriorated in terms of what the players are doing. James Tarkowski insists that they've given their all in every game, so that would at least suggest that he hasn't lost the dressing room, but Connor's right in what he says in terms of them not doing the basics properly, and too many of them were way off last night, and that's what James Tarkowski admitted. He said it wasn't for lack of trying, but, you know, they've got to do better in these individual battles, 50-50s, and he actually used the phrase, he said, you know, we've let the gaffer down in the terms of him and all the staff, you know, they set us out to do as much as they can to put us in the position to try and win a football game, and we've not done that for them. So I think, you know, the players do have to take a big chunk of this responsibility, because it's happened so many times, but 8 managers in 8 years under Farhad Moshiri, it's a toxic cycle, and a lot of these players have been there and done this before. The fact that, you know, like we said, when that first one went in, we thought, well, that's curtains, and that's because they've never come back to win a Premier League game under Sean Dyche. But then they did the same under Marco Silva, 18 months, never did that with him, so they finished 8th, and then he got sacked when they're in the relegation zone. Even Carlo Ancelotti, most successful manager in European football, 4 Champions Leagues, they were top, they were second on Boxing Day, weren't they? Ended up finishing 10th. It's been a bit of a worrying sort of cycle being repeated there with the players. So I think, you know, the players, as James Tarkowski says, they have to take a big responsibility over this. Whatever you think of Sean Dyche as a manager, we'll come on to all this, of course, You know, the players themselves, they've got to, you know, once they cross the white line, they've got to do, you know, the business themselves to a certain extent.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I mean, Connor, I don't know even know how you analyse this game from, you know, a defeat point of view, because it was just so bad. There was obviously a couple of talking points which I kind of want to come on to with Chris's player ratings, but just sticking with the Tarkowski line really, and probably the same question about, are the players playing for dice now? But just another line from an Echo piece basically said, Tarkowski says Everton's 6-0 humiliation at Chelsea is on the players and believes the team let the manager down and the fans down with an embarrassing display. So is it a collective? Who's to blame? Who's to blame for that 6-0 defeat?
Well, out of all them, the fans are not to blame.
Obviously not the fans.
They deserve a medal, to be honest. So going all the way down to the Capital on Monday night to watch that. It's both, isn't it? I think it's both. It's got to be both because, you know, clearly something somewhere is going wrong and not right, because, you know, whether Dyche's messages are falling on deaf ears a little bit, whether, you know, people perhaps don't believe in what he's got to say, whether he's getting it wrong in terms of what he's expecting. I mean, I must admit, I was a bit surprised at this high kind of high line that he started with last night, and they wanted to clearly try and get on the front foot a little bit and press, but that just left it for me too much space in behind. And, you know, Chelsea, obviously, once they cottoned onto that, you know, how many times do you see someone make an overlap and run and get in behind and pull the ball back? And obviously, Cole Palmer's second goal comes because of that. So I think it's both. I think, you know, Sean Dyche isn't faultless in all this. And if we're being brutally honest, he's also being extremely lucky, because in a normal world, in, you know, take everything, obviously what's going on off the pitch and stuff, he would be under huge pressure right now, because the run of form and the results are nowhere near good enough. And we have seen managers at this football club under Farhad Moshiri's reign sacked for far worse runs than this, and sacked for far worse kinds of performances, if I'm being honest. Because, you know, you think towards the end of Marco Silva's reign, there was a few, you know, the Norwich game always sticks out, but you forget that the week later they went to Leicester and we were in, you know, 90 seconds of getting a point. I've seen natural scores later on. Even the Liverpool game, you know, they obviously had a horror show to start with, then they fought back and Moyes Keane misses a glorious chance with 5 minutes to go to make it 4-3 and ensure a bit of a nervy finish. Obviously, in Trevor style, he misses and they went up to their end and make it 5-2. But the performance has never really felt like they fell off a cliff like they have done in recent weeks. And that's where I do think Sean Dyche has been, you know, quite fortunate. Even once he's fortunate because of what he's having to deal with at the minute. But the off-the-pitch kind of turmoil, I think, is taking control now of the club. And, you know, there's probably no one really around in a position of authority to sack Sean Dyche if they really wanted to. So there is that element. But I think as well, a large part of this is on the players, because, like I say, I think you can be set up wrong and you can perhaps go up the wrong tactics or the wrong game plan. But we saw last night some of the basics, like, just, you know, like Chris said there, individual battles, not tracking runners, not, you know, trying to keep the ball, retaining, making the wrong decisions. You know, I know we'll probably come on to it, you've got, you know, probably Everton's best player or one of the best players in Jordan Pickford, needlessly giving the ball away, and that just kills any hope, doesn't it? You know, that goal goes in, you know, it's that, the 3-0, it's like just bare basics, and the players have got to take that on them, because that's them, that's on them. Sean, you know, Sean Dyche can't, you know, I'm sure he'd love to, but he can't go on there and tell Jordan Pickford where to pass the ball. He's got to put his faith that Jordan Pickford's going to make the right decision. And last night we just saw too many of them didn't do the basics required and just made the wrong decision after wrong decision.
Chris, were you surprised at how we kind of set up? I mean, Connor's alluded there, we had a bit of a high line. I mean, seems strange to me that we would set up like that. Did you think he thought Chelsea were there to be got at, basically?
Yeah, there was that in the opening few minutes, I think. And Dwight McNeil down the left, he was closing him down, and I think James Garner as well won one there. But yeah, it was obvious from the first goal kick that Jordan Pickford took. Every Everton player was in the Chelsea half, and I was just like, oh, this one's not going short, obviously. But that's the way he sell. But, you know, Chelsea got such dangerous players down the flanks, you know, they, on both wings there, so you just get at you. So yeah, that was a strange one, really. I don't quite understand what the theory was behind that one. Perhaps attack was the best form of defence, but that quickly unravelled, didn't it, as soon as Chelsea went ahead. You know, as Connor says, you know, it is a rotten run. But I would just say in Sean Dyche's defence, I don't know if who would anybody seriously think that Everton could get in to have done a better job in these circumstances. Yeah, it's an awful run. We can't deny that. It's a record-breakingly bad run until the Burnley game, which only was stopped by, like I said, a bit of a bizarre goal in itself. Over the piece, I mean, Sean Dyche actually said in his pre-match press conference, you know, he did 35 points or whatever, if it hadn't been for the deductions, and we would have been sort of judging him differently by now. I think he acknowledges himself, you know, it's a terrible run, which it was, but who would ever, you know, they're not getting Carlo Ancelotti back, are they? You know, who would ever, and in this crisis situation, which it is, and, you know, with no money as well, who would they have actually attracted to do better? And, you know, if they were, you know, press the panic button down, do something wild. I mean, who are they going to get in at this stage of the season? Like, it's Big Sam and save Leeds like he didn't last season. I mean, I don't know. Whatever you think about Sean Dyche, the football's been attritional. It's been poor and the run has been awful. But I think, you know, these are very trying times. I'm not here to defend that run because it has been wrong. But I just think in the whole piece, I'm not too sure what people, you know, people who are pointing the finger, what they think the alternatives are.
Do you think, Kristen, if in an alternate universe, if we had the 8 points back and we were obviously further up the table and we'd been on this exact run, what do you think we'd be saying the exact same thing? Obviously, we wouldn't be happy with a 6-0 defeat, but do you think we obviously wouldn't be as...
No, people wouldn't be as twitchy, would they? Of course, because, you know, they wouldn't have that fear of relegation. Everyone would have been really frustrated. I mean, they were saying, you know, why did it so well in the first half of the season? Why had they fallen off a cliff again? Using that phrase, which they have done. But yeah, it would be. I do think it would be. It would be different because you wouldn't have that fear of relegation. Yeah, you'd be frustrated and you'd be asking a lot of questions. But I generally don't think anybody would be calling for his head, because if you look at the last two seasons, have been the two lowest equivalent points totals in the club's entire history. That's how low it's got. And with Everton, have obviously had to tighten the belts. They still haven't, you know, they've still breached PSR rules despite, as what Dyche has said, has not made given them an on-field advantage. You know, it contrasts sharply in Nottingham Forest. You know, they broke the bank, spent over $250 million to vastly improve their squad, bringing in 40 players after promotion. You know, Everton have had to sort of sell the crown jewels, haven't they, in the last few summers. And, you know, Anthony Gordon went in the January and Richarlison the summer before that. You know, I think actually with this squad of players, I'm not too sure what more we could have really expected on the whole. You know, I said it is a terrible run, but yeah, they've earned 35 points, you know, on the pitch this season, and given how bad things were the previous 2 years, I think, you know, that's got to be sort of respected, really. But yeah, it's deeply concerning, sort of the trajectory, the way things have been going in recent months.
I mean, this one win now in 15, Connor, of what it is obviously, you know, it's not good enough, it's terrible. But prior to that, we did have a winning run of 4 games in a row, which was in the same period of obviously when we were deducted these points. And I've heard a lot of people suggest or say that, whether this is right or wrong, and we're never going to know, but that those 4 games were a bit of an anomaly, that we probably wouldn't have won those games because it gave us the points deduction gave us a bounce. I mean, I'm not trying to throw conspiracy theories or anything out like that at all, but is that something that you would agree with?
Not necessarily, because I think Everton were playing better in that period of time. They looked like they had a way of playing. They had, you know, they were getting a lot of things right on the pitch. You know, you think of the Newcastle game where they were really good. You know, ironically, the reverse fixture when Chelsea come to Goodison, they were outstanding that day when they won 2-0. You know, yeah. Probably should have won by more. They were, you know, superb. Forest away, they were the better team. It was probably a bit of a blueprint of how to play away from home in the Premier League. Yeah. Burnley, they just looked, you know, too class above. Burnley didn't need that Saturday evening. So I think, on the whole, in them 4 games, the whole mood just felt different. They looked a better team. And that's my big worry, is that what has changed since then to now? Because, you know, a large part of it is it's the same players, it's the same personnel, it's, you know, probably the same setup from the manager. What is going on internally that has prompted such a swing from that to that?
This is why...
I don't think it's not to do with the fact... I think, don't get wrong, losing points galvanised the fan group, the fans, I think, more than anything. And everyone was, you know, that extra spring in the step to, you know, really get behind the lads and cheer them on, which you know, they did to an extreme level. But, you know, you forget that the one game, the first game back, they got beat 3-0 by Man United. Yeah. So it wasn't exactly as if...
It wasn't instant, was it?
Yeah. The deduction of the initial 10 points was, well, you know, great stuff. You know, like, we'd been on a massive run. We were beaten 3-0 by Man United in the first game. So I just think we looked a better team then. And that's my big worry and my big concern, is that how you can go from that in December to what we... How you can go from that on December 10th, where we played Chelsea Goodison, to that on Monday, April the 15th. How you can go from that to that, you know, in such that space of time, because they were chalk and cheese. And the worry is that it's only going one way and it's not the right way.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Nothing's really changed, though, since...
That's what I'm saying.
That's why I bring it up, because really that period of the four wins in a row, okay, didn't come immediately after the point deduction. United were always going to be a top team, but you know, we almost got like a bounce from it.
Well, I think it's been fair as well. Before the point deduction come, Everton had some good results. Obviously, they've beaten Bournemouth for home, Brentford away, Villa away in the cup.
The hat-trick of wins in London, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, they'd had the West Ham away, myself and Chris were there. That was a really good performance, you know. They'd had some really good wins prior to the point deduction, where you felt like Sean Dyche should turn the corner. They found a way. He had his best 11 out there, you know, in terms of who was playing who. And yeah, it kind of felt like it was coming together a little bit, and Sean Dyche got a real kind of, you know, blueprint on what he wanted to do. It was, you could see, you know, defensively how good they were, that they were clearly working, you know, on shape and stuff like that. And that's what really, and obviously we don't know, we're not privy to what goes on in the training ground or what's being said in the dressing rooms, but that is my big worry and concern, is that how you can go from beating Chelsea so comfortably and playing the way we did in December to being completely brushed aside 4 months later, four or five months later, with such ease. Because let's face it, you know, Cole Palmer was good last night, but we made it incredibly easy for him to look good, didn't we? Yeah. You know, and that's the big worry.
Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? I think last night your big players who'd all made big mistakes. You got Jarrod Bramfrey, you know, breakthrough star of the season. You know, he's been an absolute revelation. And I will say what he has done this season, he's done really well against the big units in the Premier League, the biggest and baddest sort of strikers up there. I mean, Chris Woodwin at Nottingham Forest, you know, he's a man mountain, but Jarrod made him look like a gentle hill in that game. But when he's up against some tricky customers, that's sometimes where he struggled, and that's what we saw last night against Cole Palmer. You know, he probably should be getting more sort of support, more help from the sort of defensive-minded midfielders in front of him against those sort of players. But yeah, I mean, for Palmer to make him ahead of that goal, and then he tried to have a second go at him, he still couldn't get near him. So Jarrod Bramfrey, you know, bad day at the office for him. And then obviously it got even worse because he had to go off injured. You know, he's only missed the one game since he came into the side, and that was suspension at Burnley. So let's hope he's okay after that chasing experience. But yeah, he struggled. Jordan Pickford, who's done as much as anyone to keep Everton in the Premier League in recent seasons, you know, like Connor said, I mean, you can't do that, what he did. He made a mistake for England against Belgium recently, but this was worse, wasn't it? You know, put it onto his right foot and straight at him. You don't plan for that, you know, for a player as outstanding as him. You know, world-class keeper, probably best keeper in the Premier League, non-Brazilian, for him to do something like that. And then even somebody like Abdoulaye Doucouré, who's, you know, really struggled since he came back to fitness. So he went off injured in that Burnley away game on 16th of December. And, you know, he's top scorer. And he hasn't scored since he came back in. He had that one game, then he came against Villa, then he did his other hamstring. And for a player who you sort of rely on to do so much hard running, sort of bridge that gap between midfield and attack, and so the striker, whether it's Calvert-Lewin or Beto, isn't isolated, it's asking a lot for him. He's to come in and blame the struggling side and sort of try and find his form and fitness again. And now it's a big ask for him because, you know, such great physical demands on him after what was a great 6 months form prior to that. I mean, Joe did a couple of pieces with Decore over the weekend in which he said, you know, Dyche genuinely changed his life because he was frozen out under Frank Lampard and, you know, the way he sort of embraced this new role. So if it's some sort of players, like we say, things haven't changed in that Dyche often doesn't change. He's got the way he plays, whether you like that or not, that's his style. So he hasn't sort of ripped things up. But, you know, when you've got three sort of key individuals like that, making mistakes. I mean, Decore got moved back, didn't he, to that more withdrawn role in the second half and then gave away the penalty. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's a bad night for some sort of big individuals for the Blues, and, you know, that's going to be a big factor in it all.
Definitely a bad night, Chris. Just a reminder to everyone watching live, get your questions in, get your comments in, get your opinions in. Connor, did you read Chris's play ratings last night?
Did, yeah. I was waiting for him to drop, to be honest.
Yeah?
To be honest, yeah. But sad like that, I do like to... I mean, normally when we're at Goodison, I generally know what he's doing anyway because we sit next to each other, so I can generally see who he's scoring what.
Do you get to influence any...
No. It's all Chris's own way. But send any feedback to Christoph Beasley, not me. But no, I was waiting last night to see how low they were going to be, because when you get beat 6-0, there's very few positives, isn't there, you can give anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can read those player ratings on the Liverpool Echo website. I mean, Chris, do you want to go through a couple of them? I've got a couple of names here.
I
was a little bit surprised because obviously that I think the goalkeeper and the defence took the brunt.
Yeah.
A lot of twos, threes, but you gave like Garner, Anana and Decore 5-5-4 respectively.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought everyone was terrible in themselves, but I was actually surprised at how high you gave those.
Well,
three.
I think they got off the hook because they got pulled, didn't they, at half time? So they were lucky, really. I think everyone sort of went down further in the second half. So that's probably what saved them in that respect. Yeah.
Well, Connor, I mean, we talked about this. You know, this is nothing new. Okay, the 6-0 defeat. Conceding that many goals, that is probably a bit of a rarity under Sean Dyche. You know, we haven't conceded that many in one game. But even with the Burnley win, you know, I think a lot of people leaving Goodison Park last weekend were still very unnerved and not really confident as Everton can get themselves, you know, out of this mess. And for me, I just felt like it was, all of this is like a culmination. This poor run of form is a culmination, and that defeat last night of just what would usually end a manager's reign.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier, Sean Dyche has been very lucky that off the field factors have taken control of the operations of the football club, because normally, you know, even if Everton had 35 points, and you know they had in the point deduction, if they were on this still on this run of form now, he would be under huge pressure. Because people would be sitting there now saying, this isn't good enough, and is he going to be the right man to take us forward next season? Because naturally, you know, if you have a fall, like I know we keep saying this, but yeah, a fall off a cliff like Everton have done since, you know, December, people would be saying, well, looking to next season, I'm not sure Sean Dyche, you know, if this carries on. So the pressure would be on. But, you know, we all know why the pressure isn't really on, because there's an ongoing takeover saga. You know, and until that's sorted out, you suspect that we, you know, won't really get any real clarity on Sean Dyche's future as Everton manager, unless, you know, and unless Everton lose, say, the next three games. Obviously, they're all at home, aren't they? And they maybe panic a little bit going into towards May, but I still can't really see that happening. But yeah, I think there are major question marks over Sean Dyche. And Chris is right, what Chris said earlier, there are mitigating factors. And you know, I can't imagine for 1 second how tough it has been to manage Everton this season in terms of the 2 point deductions, one of them being 10 and then having to appeal. The takeover saga, you know, there's been so many, you know, factors, hasn't there? And I know he said to do that at the end of last season, you know, he's got one booking and from his, was it 9 years at Burnley?
Yeah.
He's probably got 9 or 10 in him for 1 season at Everton.
Probably double that now, yeah.
6 months at Everton, and that probably has increased now.
You know, volume.
But off this season alone. So there is that issue. But yeah, I mean, you know, people I speak to who are Everton supporters who go to the game every week, and you know, some of them were there last night at Stamford Bridge. They have major concerns, I think, moving forward about Sean Dyche being the right man to take, you know, Everton forward and what's going to happen. So I think them questions are going to continue to linger unless Sean Dyche finds a way to stop this rot and they start winning football matches and, they start producing better performances, because, you know, football's a results-driven business and, you know, managers always judged on results and stuff. But even some of the performances and the way we've seen Everton play in recent months hasn't been great, has it? I mean, even the Burnley game the other week wasn't great. Crystal Palace on that Monday night, was it in January, was pretty dour. Not so much so, I think I spent the whole first half yawning because I was just so bored because there was nothing going on. That's the real worrying concern, I think, for me, is we haven't really seen this team evolve. And, you know, understandably, they'll probably say, well, you know, factors off the pitch are playing a part because people are, you know, aren't really sure what's going on. And that is understandable. But yeah, I would like to see a lot more moving forwards, because otherwise, I think Everton will stay up. But I think if things carry on the way they are and Everton limp over the line come May, and then, you know, say 7-7 do take over the football club, I think they'll have a big question that they'll need to answer in their short kind of time in charge, taking over.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
We obviously, all we want is for Everton to stay up, no matter what. We've got to speak about it. And I know it's not as plain as just, you know, black and white, yes or no. We know the club aren't in a position to sack Sean Dyche. Yeah. We've already suggested here that if we were in a position financially, and whether, you know, we had people at the club who could make these decisions, that he probably would have been sacked by now. You would have thought so anyway. Does he look like a manager who knows what he's doing and is able to get us out of this mess, basically?
Yeah, I would say the run has to be a concern, and things are going to sort of go one way or the other, aren't they? And with this hat-trick of home games in a week. But like I've said, I think that he said himself from the moment he was appointed, he is a Marmite manager. In his own words, he used that phrase, you know, he does divide people in the terms of the way he sort of acts and his methods. You know, I either love him or hate him in that respect. And he's quite an abrasive character at times. I spoke to Steve Stone in the pre-season training camp by the shores of Lake Geneva, and he's known Sean Dyche for many decades, and he told me there's a softer side to him, but don't tend to see that in our sort of line of work with him, and I don't know much of the players seeing that. He's very confident in his methods. You know, he does have, you know, a particular way of going about things, and he believes that they're the right way. And I think, to be fair, to a certain extent, it's probably we might not like the taste, but it's the sort of the medicine that Everton might need right now. You know, because it's a crisis on and off the pitch, and that, you know, with these PSR restrictions now, and the budget's been cut so much, the playing staff. We'd all like to see Everton playing better football, and School of Science it definitely ain't at the moment, but I just don't know much more you could do with this group of players. Maybe it could be a bit like Frank Lampard, and then it was open the back. I know, yes, last night was 6-0, but, you know, they tend to be tougher at the back. I think the problem is kind of what Connor was saying, in that the things that you expect from a Sean Dyche team, you know, for them to be compact and difficult to beat, and that wasn't happening last night, and that's not been happening too many times of late, so that has to be the concern. But I would actually sort of challenge that point that he would be getting sacked under different circumstances. I acknowledge it's a rotten run, and as Connor said, Everton managers have been sacked after sort of lesser runs than this one. But if you take his work as a whole, they've progressed from where they were. They make no bones about it. They were going down on the Frank Lampard. They were going to get relegated. They ended up avoiding the first relegation in 72 years by one goal.
Just on that, how many games did Dyche have when he was at 17?
Was it 18 or something? Just after the halfway mark.
So were you not surprised in itself that it actually went down to the final day? Because before the Brighton game, let's face it, that was another anomaly in itself.
Yeah.
Before the Brighton game, we were down, effectively.
After Newcastle, we were gone.
That's what we all feared, yeah.
So the fact that it took him 17 games or 18 games, whatever it was, to keep us up on the final day against a, you know, a relatively poor Bournemouth side. Were you not? Was that?
Yeah,
not
I think he admitted himself. Yeah, I think Sean Dyche admitted himself. It was a closer call than he imagined it was going to. It
that
was going to be
red flag, though.
Well, they were joint bottom when he took over, weren't he? They were in free fall. I mean, Lampard, we can all sort of have a debate when Lampard should have gone, but, you know, he had to go. I think Lampard had to go. I thought at the time Lampard to go, and I think, you know, we can all sort of like debate this. I'd have said the Brighton game, but it was just a tough task. I mean, what he inherited, like I say, I'm not there to just say that, you know, Sean Dyche is amazing because he's not, but I think under very difficult circumstances, I would challenge if anybody said, well, you know, you're fine to say I don't like Sean Dyche, I don't like his methods, I don't like his football, but who realistically do you think we could have had Evan to have done better? I don't think Bielsa would have worked, and he wasn't coming to the summer anyway. He would have been in the Championship by then. So, yeah, what are the realistic alternatives? I either now or then or whenever, as you know, these are desperate times, unfortunately, for Everton on and off the pitch. You know, it's the worst it's ever been, and I don't know. I got a bit of stick about this the other day. You're saying there's a few fans not very far away who's had a difficult week, and, you know, I don't think many of them in the last 5 minutes in Evertonian shoes, to be honest.
I mean, Chris, you're absolutely right. You made so many valid points.
Yeah.
There's so many mitigating circumstances, and, you know, if people looked at my personal Twitter last night, you will have seen that, you know, it was very much.
Were you watching the game, was you?
I was watching the game, yeah, while you were texting me.
Phone through the telly.
You know what?
I was behind the couch at that point.
Well, it got to half time and I thought, I want to switch this game off, but I can't. I need to speak about it next night. Yeah. But I was very much dice out, but obviously there's only so many words you can fit into a tweet. So everything
Dyche out, you'd be all right. We don't even fit that in.
But the point is, what you're saying is absolutely right. We've got no money to sack him. It's effectively, we're just praying and hoping now that he can just get us over the line.
Yeah, but I think he's implemented a lot of improvements. But then, like we said, that there's after the, you know, you used the Fulham Cup, Carabao Cup game as sort of like an unfortunate sort of watershed moment, sort of that work that we saw, the progress we saw in the first half of the season's unravelled quite a lot, and has mean that, you know, it's such a difficult sort of circumstance now. Yeah, it's we keep saying they should have Evan have only got themselves to blame if they don't finish this job and sort of see themselves over the line. Much as we're going to be nervous about these upcoming matches, you know, if you could sort of hand pick sort of games that you could have, other than the derby, this is sort of like a sort of the kind of run that you would want them to sort of have in these circumstances. So given that they've got Nottingham Forest, Brentford, and then a couple of weeks after that, after this Luton away game, the Sheffield United at home, you know, if they don't stay up, and I think Conor and I discussed this, you know, they've only got themselves to blame.
Yeah, I mean, that was because you're right, me, we spoke about this privately, like off camera numerous times, you know, before Burnley, you know, if you started at Burnley to the end of the season, if Everton can't collect enough points in that run of games to preserve their Premier League status, then, you know, quite frankly, they've only got themselves to blame. They deserve to play in the Sky Bet Championship next season. It's as simple as that.
I mean, you're right. It's all in our hands with the games coming up. My biggest concern, though, Connor, and things that you've noticed, that we've all noticed over the past couple of weeks, and we've already alluded to at the beginning of this podcast, I do honestly think the players aren't playing for him. I honestly do think he's lost the players. And it's not just come down to quality. I think there's obviously been incidents while he'd been away. You know, the slap, I think he's, you know, certain players are just, you know, probably on his back. They don't respect him. I think another player who should be massive for us, Anana, he's, you know, we've talked in the past about whether he's got an attitude problem. You know, I don't necessarily think he has an attitude problem. I think he's got a Sean Dyche problem. I think he was absolutely shocking last night. My biggest concern going into this Forest game now is that, with it being a six-pointer, the players aren't playing for Sean Dyche, and that's a massive concern.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very strong statement to make, and I'm sure that's one that a lot of the squad would certainly dispute and knock down and say that that's, you know, not the case. My big worry is not so much the whole, you know, they're not playing for the manager, etc. Is they should still have a large chunk of personal pride. Like, you know, in life in general, you know, you might not agree with someone, but you should always go out there and try and do your best and give 100%. And that's my big worry, is that some of them players, now this might have not, some of them players in that dressing room might be 100% behind Sean Dyche, some of them might not. That's kind of football, that's how probably dressing rooms work. But every one of them should still go out there and want to do their best, give 100% and do the bare basics.
Yeah.
And what we saw last night was a large proportion of that team not doing the bare basics. You know, too many of them lost their individual battles, didn't track back. You know, we've alluded to it all on this show. And that's my big worry, because I think you've got, regardless of what your thoughts are on, you know, points deductions and the manager or the tactics, or, you know, that's let's not forget, that's also probably an elephant in the room, isn't it? Then players are sat there going, well, hang on, we've amassed 35 points this season, and because the way the club's being ran at times, from times when they weren't even there, some of them, you know, we're all of a sudden find ourselves in a battle to avoid relegation. That shouldn't be on us, you know, we've done our part. So that's obviously also an elephant in the room, but I think you've still got to give 100%, and we didn't see that last night, and that's my biggest criticism. But I do get where you're coming from in terms of, you know, and I saw that quite a lot on social media last night, that there was a lot of people raising concerns, saying this is almost like the players are not playing for the manager and they're not listening to what he's got to say. And, you know, we don't know if that to be the case for certain, but, you know, what we do know is that by Sunday, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, we'll have a really good idea, because if they can bounce back against Forest on Sunday, you can almost say, but Chelsea was just a bit of a major blip, and it was a night where everything went wrong. And, you know, Chris alludes to the injuries, you know, picks up 3 injuries last night that we could have done without. It was just one of them bad nights that we have, and Everton are prone to having bad nights or bad afternoons during seasons. We've seen that time and time again in recent years, unfortunately. But if on Sunday it's a bad performance, and, you know, heaven forbid Forest come away with 3 points in the victory, then major question marks and major questions will start to come to the fore, because then people will start saying, well, God, something seriously isn't right here.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, well, Forest obviously a massive game, Chris, but, you know, you touched on this point that sacking managers continuously, it's like a toxic cycle. And, you know, you're not wrong, but if I can counter that, we need to stop hiring terrible managers in the first place. At the end of the day.
Well, I don't think they were terrible.
Were they terrible? Yeah, they were that much of a mixed bunch, weren't they?
Sean Dyche was a freebie, and he was sacked by Burnley. No one else wanted them.
But he was the man everyone wanted for the job all the time, and he was the man who everyone foreseen to be the right person for the job.
Yeah. I'd not say it is.
No complaint about it.
Yeah. Yeah. There was such a mixed bag. I mean, yeah. If we've got to critique each one of the Machiri appointments, another week for that.
If you got onto Rafa by itself, it's a podcast by itself.
Wow.
Well, before we come on to the comments then, because I know Connor's got to get back to his day job, 3 o'clock. What next then, lads? Connor, you've kind of touched upon it a little bit, but we'll probably end up previewing.
Do that separate.
Forest on Friday, but just how are you feeling now? Like, what next? It's got to be a win against Forest, hasn't it?
It's like the Burnley game again, isn't it? It's like the result is everything, but, you know, you'd like to hope there would be a big improvement. And I just think those players, like we said, their personal pride, whatever you think, Sean Dyche, maybe it'll all come out in the wash, whether that, you know, they are responding to his methods or not. And as Connor said, it's only a natural thing in every football dressing room. There'll be more players responsive than others. You know, James Tarkowski is probably, you know, the chief example, isn't he, of a Dyche disciple, as it were, and maybe some of the others less so. But yeah, the stakes are so high at the moment. You know, the survival of Everton Football Club. You know, you can't down tools. So there has to be a huge response from the players themselves.
The players have got to go out there and set the tone, because one thing that really was graced on me is the fans turn up, getting over the line, the fans doing this. The fans can't keep doing that year on year. not fair. Like, you can't just keep turning to the fans and every...
They're mentally and physically exhausted, aren't they? They're drained.
You can't keep turning to the wealth of fans and being, you know, they're the ones who are going to drag us over the line and, you know, land the streets and at the thousands. You know, we've all seen that in recent years. We've all been on them streets when they've welcomed them in the thousands or, you know, they've waved them off to away games. They can't have done any more. And yet here we are again, still in that same position.
And also, it doesn't work. I mean, the Newcastle game that we mentioned already, I mean, it's great to have those atmospheres, but it didn't work. They lost 4-1.
There'll be no better way for the place to actually give the fans something to shout about by starting Sunday on the front foot, 100%, looking interested, winning personal battles, giving their all, and just getting people off the seats and giving them something to get behind and get, you know, not even excited by, just to get behind.
Yeah.
And that's what they've got to do on Sunday. They've got to get on the front foot early, set the tone, show that they're going to give a response and give the fans something to really get behind, not rely on the fans to lift them. And, you know, they can't keep turning to the fans. They've got to take responsibility themselves and, you know, sort it out themselves, because we can't just keep turning to this well of the fans, you know, to get us over the line, because they've done that the last 2 years. And Craig Chris says they're mentally and physically exhausted because, you know, again, they're going through this whole nervously looking over the shoulder relegation battle. It's on the players on Sunday to set the tone and to give the fans something to shout about, and that also includes the manager, because he's probably got to pick the right team.
Well, Connor, you're probably not going to be on the pod Friday, so I'm going to ask for an early prediction. Chris, you can give yours on
keep your powder dry.
You can give yours on Friday, but Connor, like, wow. Say, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go for 1-0 Everton. Probably be a bit nervy, probably be a bit, like, you know, edge of the seat stuff for maybe all the wrong reasons, but I think we'll just get over the line because we've got to get over the line.
Okay, well, Chris will come. We'll do ours on Friday if we're on the pod.
I have to hope that Connors is better than his Grand National prediction.
They were simpler times, let me tell you, in Jury's course over them 3 days. They were much simpler times than watching that 90 minutes last night.
Yeah, I heard you had a fantastic 3 days over in Aintree.
It was superb, yeah. Like I say, it was a welcome distraction from watching Everton Football Club. And that 90 minutes last night brought me back down to earth with one almighty bump.
Okay, well, we've got loads of questions and comments, so we'll... 7:57, so we've got a couple of minutes to get through. So
rattle through them.
Two Wheel Lucas, it's clear to me that Dice has lost the team. I'm not surprised. He's stubborn, no plan B. Plays players out of position.
He certainly is stubborn, and you could probably say that there is no plan B, but I said that's probably going back to, you know, what he thinks is the way of going about things. He's clear in his convictions, but obviously not everyone... agrees with that. Players out of position. I'm trying to think. See, Ben Godfrey came on in stoppage time at right back. Ashley Young on the right wing again. I've actually preferred Young on the wing than at full back, because he there's a few moments earlier in the season when he was causing trouble at full back. But I don't know. Jack Harrison came on, then he did a different role again, played in the middle, sort of when they moved to Corey back.
Difficult when you. That
I mean, you go on, yeah. I mean, you must be thinking last night, the most you're coming on with 4-0 down half time. Exactly. Like, thanks for this, but yeah. I think the lack of plan B though is the lack of squad depth, isn't it? Yeah. They don't really have a massive squad and loads of options to make massive changes and have different plans.
Yeah, I suppose there's just one crumb of comfort. Dan June was back on the bench, wasn't he? Just hopefully he can play some sort of role in the running.
God's holding all of our hope on Dan June. You're saying. Okay, Sam Stanley, Connor says, you fear for the fans after a performance like that, you'd reimburse the fans immediately you went down and give them the price of the match ticket back.
I mean, that's always the...
We can't afford to.
Don't breach again because of that. But yeah, I did that genuinely. I had a serious email from a fan about that, and I think Joe Thomas did as well. You know, it's understandable, isn't it? It'd be a nice gest. No, it'd be a nice gest. The club wouldn't necessarily have to do it. The players could possibly do it out of their own pocket. I'm not telling them to do, but people have suggested it to us.
Does Beto know the offside rule, Connor? Robert O'Brien. I mean, that incident was quite weird, wasn't it? So far offside for that goal that he scored.
I've mixed views on Beto. There's a lot of enthusiasm there. There's a lot of rawness there, but there's still a player who's got a long, long way to go, I think, before he is probably in a position to properly lead the line for a team in the Premier League.
Somebody suggested Dennis Draculaerse with a huge price tag to me today, which was concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit, well, I didn't give any excuse for the chance he missed early on in the first half. The flag went up, but, you know, still put the ball in the back of the net and then worry about the flag later. And on replay showed that he might have got the benefit of a VAR decision. The header, yeah, it was a bit worrying that he didn't actually clock at any point prior to the ball coming in, that he was, like, so far offside. But, yeah, there's I think Beto's still got a long, long way to go.
Emma, EFC, bit of a funny one. This Tark's not been the same player since his telly show came out.
Wow.
Same as Dominic Calvert-Lewin when he started modelling.
And say to that, is she trying to say that he's tired out? I don't know if we can give an answer to that one on air. Well,
the pre-watershed. I think we're on pre-watershed, aren't we? So,
yeah, he's had a rough few weeks. But I thought, you know, you couldn't really single him out last night. They were all struggling with it.
I think if anything, he had a rough night, but probably not helped by the fact that Branthwaite had probably his roughest night of the season so far, and Pickford behind him had probably his roughest night of the season so far. And like Chris said earlier, one thing I will say about James Tarkowski is, you know, he does show a bit of leadership, and takes a bit of accountability, and he always does front up and, you know, speak after games. And we've been fortunate enough to speak to him, well, you know, myself and Chris, probably at times when we would like to have not have been speaking about bad results, but he comes out, he fronts up, he answers questions, and you can't ask any more of that because not everyone's queued up to do that. So, and I think he had a rough night, but he was nowhere near the Everton's. The Everton player had the roughest night.
Interesting one from Roy Nixon. Forrest and Luton have far more about them than us. At least they have a go. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, we know it's in our hands, and, you know, we'd probably say 6 to 7 points, we'll probably do it. But at the end of the day, if Forrest and Luton start picking up points, we're in trouble because they haven't been great either themselves.
No, I understand that's not been invited poison. So the Luton form come think Luton's at 2 days and enough to both bite their efforts and endeavour. So, you know, hopefully things will continue the way they have done in recent weeks. But, you know, I don't think it's a case of we should be too worried because so far they haven't put enough points on the board just like we haven't.
Okay, well, I think we will leave it there. We'll call time on it. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Anything else to talk about before we...
No, I think we're all done there.
I think we chewed the fat enough there on the 6-0 defeat.
We have, certainly have. Okay, please remember to hit the like, subscribe and share button on the Royal Blue YouTube channel. Also follow us on Facebook, which is Everton FC Liverpool Echo. I've been Ian Kroll, joined by Chris Beasley and Conor O'Neill, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.